It's Tuesday, September 11th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, I got a great show for you today. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How are ya? Well, I tell ya, it's very, very odd doing a show where I know I don't have to get up and, go to an official job in the morning. Oh, it's been a very, very outstanding last couple of days. Talk a little bit about that here in a few moments. But of course, all of you that are long-term subscribers of the show, hey, I want to thank you for being part of the Ohana here, being part of the family. Those of you who are checking out the show for the very first time, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content. You can, of course, catch all the archive podcasts via the podcast link on the website. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter so you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. And that's our way of sending you all the great links of stuff that we talk about during each show. So how's everybody anyway? Well, I tell you, it's a very interesting late evening here. I did not get to do the recording of the podcast earlier today, as I kind of was hoping to, but it was all good intentions. My wife and I met with our realtor this afternoon. We had looked at a place on Sunday afternoon that caught our eye, and we have actually put in an offer on a place. So we'll see what kind of happens there. It's not exactly 100% what we want. We're hem-hawing today about it half the day, saying, do we want to make an offer? Do we not want to? What do we want to do? And finally, we decided to move forward. We do know that the offer is not the only offer that the homeowner has received. So we're running in a competition for it. It is not a single-family home. We have actually been looking at both townhouses and also single-family homes. But the townhouse in this instance is in a town called Mililani. And it's not too bad. Inside's been remodeled. It's really nice. It really, really is. And the appliances are a couple of years old. A remodel was done a couple of years ago, and it has definite potential. We looked at everything, and we really wanted a four-bedroom so that I would have a studio. But as we were walking through this unit, we kept saying, wow, right there, if we made a little bit of some construction, I'd be able to have a terrific studio. So that is what's going to happen. If we end up getting this house, I will definitely be hiring a contractor to build a studio. So we will... We'll see how this goes and whether or not our offer gets accepted. We'll probably know tomorrow. But kind of exciting here. And I got to find a new place to live. I really do. I'm on borrowed time in this particular dwelling. But anyway, I guess we'll see what happens there. I'm not worried one way or the other. If we don't find exactly what we want, or if this offer doesn't go through, we will definitely be renting at some point. But I'd rather be owning than renting. Getting ready here for the upcoming podcast expo. I've got stuff stacking up here. What I do is I pre-position stuff into kind of like days of events. On Friday, we've got the podcast awards ceremony. Matter of fact, there is a link to the details on the podcast awards ceremony at podcastawards.com. And I need a certain gear set up for that day. I need cameras. I need wireless mics, mixers. Yes, my nasty cough is still here. I just can't seem to shake this thing. But I've got all that stacked up and piled. Matter of fact, this week I'm going to do a dry run, hook all the gear up, make sure all the levels are set where it is, because I'm really cramped for time. And This year, we're going to expand a little bit about what we're going to be doing. So I just have to be able to pull stuff. I ship this stuff over in one box. And then as it comes out of the box, I kind of have in my mind set up where everything's going to go already, even though we're not there. And I just plug the cables in, flip the switches on, turn the levels to the preset levels, and I'm good. So, yeah, a little bit of a challenge, so far it has served me well, and I was able to, on my own, essentially get everything set up in about an hour last year. And I think it's going to take a little longer this time, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll have some extra hands to help for sure. Well, the iPhone. Hey, news out on that is that the unlock code is now available. So I've been watching the discussion on that today. Some people having a little bit of trouble, particularly those that have SIM cards that are locked and unable to be unlocked. So those are folks who have been having trouble getting activated on different SIM cards. So I will be watching this here and expect maybe I'll go ahead and make the plunge. I don't know. The significant other gave me the go-ahead. She's like, well, you know, she goes, I can use the iPod Touch and you can just have the iPhone. So we'll see what happens here. I'll keep you advised. The office is clean. Saturday, I went through the closets and got rid of all the junk that I didn't need. I sent some stuff to Salvation Army. Just a pile of stuff. And I've actually got some stuff I need to take pictures of because I promised all of you that I would be putting some of this stuff and making it available to all of you. So I'll have that up here maybe end of the week. I don't know. But the office is clean. My daughter came in. She goes, Dad, wow, what did you do? And it really wasn't that bad. It was just needed organized. And now I'm all set up and able to work efficiently here out of the office. Now, my to-do list that I had has flown the coop, and I'm in a little mild panic because it had some very important things in there that I've got to get done over the next month. So I'm going to be on the hunt for that first thing tomorrow morning. But I'm going to continue here to whack away at stuff and today wasn't super productive. I wish it would have been a little bit more productive, but tomorrow I plan on being in front of the PC most of the day getting stuff done, and I got a bunch of stuff I got to get caught up with the raw voice. Now, this morning just started out on a really, really sad note. As you all know, I left, I packed my office out on Friday. I brought everything home. I actually have a chair that has followed me around for 5 or 6 years. It's a nice executive chair, and everyone always, when I come rolling in with this thing in a new office, everybody gets their, you know, their eyeballs on and say, hey, I want that chair when it leaves. I was like, no, when I leave, the chair leaves. And on Friday when I left, it was the last thing that went out the door with me. You know, instead of walking out with papers and stuff, I rolled out with my chair, and it's always good for a laugh. But I had turned over one of my jobs to a young sailor, and he had spent some extensive time doing pass down with him and getting him all set. And I got a call this morning from one of the guys in the office, and I could tell immediately upon the call that something good wasn't happening. And he said, hey, Todd, I need you to get together with a different individual. The person that you turned this particular job over to on Friday had a massive stroke on Sunday, and it's not looking real good. And I just was flabbergasted and still really am. So while I really can't call out his name on the show, my heart and prayers tonight go out to his family, his wife and children. It's going to be a very, very tough road if he does survive. But you just, again, one of those things, you just never know when life is going to throw you one of those curveballs, and it sure did this morning. And I just sit here dumbfounded, and I immediately had to get on the phone, and I spent, oh gosh, probably 3 hours on the phone making some arrangements and getting some things changed over so that they could continue doing what they were doing. But anyway, you know, it's just you cherish those that are closest to you, and, you know, always when you're talking to people, you just never know when that conversation may be the last one you have, really. Now, today is 911. And, well, of course, this show is, you know, we don't talk about geopolitical stuff. We don't go into stuff beyond technology. But my, again, this is another day of a national day that everyone needs to, you know, in at least in the United States. I hope you're all thinking about it and what happened on that day. And my heart definitely goes out to, again, to all those that lost their lives on that very tragic and momentous day. So anyway, yeah, enough on that. And I got a lot of stuff for you to talk about tonight in technology. It was a good news day. And how'd y'all like show 300? Did y'all enjoy it? We got some emails back, and some folks are like running a show behind. I don't know what it is, but every once in a while I'll get, there's just a segment of listeners that will be like, "Hey, Todd, I want you to put in for this." I'm like, "That already happened on the last show." and they run behind. Now, one thing I failed to do on the last show was I failed to go through the email of all of the listener email that came in. And, boy, I got a stack tonight. So we'll see how we do. And I got a week's worth of stuff to kind of catch up with. I'll hit as much of it as I can near the end of the show. But as always, I want to thank all of you for supporting the sponsors here. And did you know that domain names from GoDaddy.com are up to 70% less than the competition? Plus, each domain includes free hosting with a website builder, a free blog, complete email, and much, much more. Did you know you could get $96 in free extras with any domain name from GoDaddy.com? Hey, check it out. When you get out there and you pick up a domain name, a hosting account, whatever it may be, when you get to the checkout counter, use the code TODD when you check out and save an additional 10% on your order. Geek5 will get you some 15% off of $20 or more. One that I like to use on renewals is ComSale, ComSale. That gets you a discount on .coms on renewals. So get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Right, I've been kind of planning and projecting here what's going to happen through the rest of the month because of everything going on. Normally, our next roundtable would be on September 29th. And because of the podcast and new media expo out in Ontario that weekend, we're going to hold the next roundtable on September 22nd. Of course, it's sponsored by GoToMeeting. That being said, I know Annie McCaskey has a good guest lined up. He's actually been nurturing a contact for a couple of months now. So we should have a good lineup of content. And I'm still working on the agenda. If you have a product or service that you would like to demonstrate or talk about, and it's tech-related, definitely send me an email over at, you can send it to feedback@ techpodcast.com. That's where we have a lot of that email come in, and or even at geeknews@gmail.com, and I can get you lined up to be a presenter over there. And of course, we're using GoToMeeting in these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail really just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business, associates, family, and friends. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. Please try GoToMeeting free today. And thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here and, of course, over at Tech Podcast as well. Okay, let's dig into the content that I have in lineup for you tonight. First article comes from Ace Adults. It talks about how Firefox has had more than 400 million downloads. Firefox was introduced on November 9, 2004, and really, I think as many of you know, started a evolution that resulted in Microsoft having to get off their butts and improve Internet Explorer, while at the same time Firefox spread like wildfire. And is now contributed by tens of thousands of different plugin developers, And it's just amazing the amount of uptake. And I see, at least coming to Geek News Central, when I look at the stats, I look at the number of people using Firefox as compared to Internet Explorer. And at least from my site, the numbers continue to climb month after month. It's never, you know, lost market share. It's gained market share. And I remain a big, big Firefox fan myself. Unfortunately, I don't know what's going on here, but I've got Google Desktop running on my desktop. And I like to use it as the desktop search. And up to, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, when I would double-click that icon, it would load the Google search in Firefox. But all of a sudden, just one day, and I booted the machine up, it has switched to Internet Explorer. And I can't find in the settings where to switch it back. And if anyone's got any idea, I'd love to hear some suggestions here, because it's just really annoying, especially when you've got Firefox opened up and you've got, you know, 15 tabs open, and you're like, oh, where's this one piece of data? And you double-click it, then IE loads. And I would just prefer having IE never load at all. And I'll talk a little bit about why, especially those of you that are Skype users here a little later in the show. If you're a Skype user and you're using IE, you'll definitely want to stay tuned. Some news coming out of the Silicon Valley. Apple is now eyeing the upcoming wireless auction. It appears that Steve Jobs and company are considering joining the FCC auction and going for a shot for a piece of the spectrum. Although the Business Week article, as I've read through this, says that it's a slight chance, they feel that there's a lot of risk involved for Apple to do this. Now, they're sitting on about $14 billion in cash right now, so they definitely can afford the $4.6 billion minimum bid required by the government to start bidding, but they feel that it's going to cost upwards of $9 billion to win a portion of the spectrum. I'm just thinking to myself, they got to deal with AT&T. It's going to last a few years. $9 billion for a network that they really can't use with their own iPhone. Does this make sense? I don't know. We'll have to see what happens here with this. Maybe they got some more ideas. But, you know, here you go. You got two big companies. You got Google and Apple that are considering getting in on the action here. It's definitely going to shake things up, and if they do get in, it'll be interesting to watch how it all evolves. There's a good article over on Ars Technica. Our not-so-good friends over at the RIAA have been dealt a blow by a judge who has refused to just allow one of their boilerplate lawsuits to pass swiftly through the judicial system. A federal judge in California has refused to grant the RIAA's judgment based on their complaint, and they've forced them to draw up a new complaint with more specifics, because the data that was contained in the original complaint was just very basic. Here we got Jane Doe. She's downloaded X number. She shared so many. This is how much money we want. She didn't respond to us. We want this money from her. Please, can you put a stamp on this so we can get the money from this lady? And the judge is like going, whoa, not so fast here. We want some more info. So this gal named Yolanda Rodriguez, who was sued by the record labels for copyright infringement in November of last year, ignored the problem, and apparently she's hoping it will go away. Meanwhile, the court is, very well could just judge against her, and she could just get a court-ordered a judgment. So we'll have to see what happens with this one. But at least the judges now are kind of like pushing back a little bit on the RIAA and saying, not so fast. You're not going to rubber stamp these things through my court. And I wish more courts would do this and, in a sense, make it more expensive for the RIAA to do this. All right, over at Engadget, they've got a high-def video of the iPhone unlock. It's really pretty basic. I read through the instructions here. They started out with the AT&T SIM inserted. They pulled that out and dropped a T-Mobile SIM into it. They connected to the phone over SSH. They transferred the iPhone SIM-free unlock app over SCP. They restarted Springboard. I guess that's the iPhone default application launcher. They ran the iPhone SIM-free app. And then when it was completed, it said that the iPhone shows the T-Mobile SIM no longer produces invalid error. It asked for the activation as expected. Then they use a reactivation off-camera using iAssign, whichever that is. And then we're able to get the T-Mobile SIM activated in about 15 minutes end-to-end to get this done. So those of you that have iPhones that want to stick your T-Mobile SIM in it, move forth and be merry and have fun. You know, when I was growing up, and I think I talked about this on the last show, I don't know, maybe a couple of shows ago, my dad had a machine shop. Oh my goodness, it was welders, drills. We had a supply shed that had just every imaginable bolt, nut, screw, washer, wire size, different types of connectors, you name it, we had it. And we had metal presses, we had metal cutters, we had grinders. It was just a regular machine shop. We're working on heavy equipment. Well, not very many of us have a cool shop like that. But if you live in Silicon Valley, and if you are a geek, if you're an inventor, if you're a hobbyist, if you're a hacker, if you're an artist, and you want to find a place to work on cool stuff that you're designing, they can go all now and hang out at a place called the Tech Shop. It's in Menlo Park in the Silicon Valley. And this is a world-class workshop that's really, really cool. Tech Shop provides its members with a huge variety of tools, machines, and equipment in a 15,000-square-foot workshop environment. They've got machines there. And this is something I didn't have. Of course, there was, you know, computers when I was growing up were, I don't even think, I think I had a Tandy, a Radio Shack special is what I had when I was growing up as a kid. But they've got laser cutters that will work with CAD, CNC equipment, all kinds of, it's just amazing here. There is a membership fee. And it's pretty affordable, really, if you're looking to have a place to go work on stuff. It's $100 a month or $1,100 for an annual pass, 30 days for a day pass. I would love to have one of these shops in my local area. Wow, talk about cool. And they've got everything. You know, I'm just looking here, and they've got hot air guns. They've got just every imaginable tool that you would need. Molding stuff, you name it, it's there, and very, very awesome. Great place to get a finger cut off if you don't know how to use the gear. But if you guys think any of these in your area, is this like the first one of these in the nation that I've ever seen? Some of this stuff I haven't seen in many, many years. You got lathes, and you've got drilling machines, a lot of stuff that you know, you really have to get trained how to use, but really, really cool. I'm absolutely jealous. I really am. But you can check it out, Tech Shop. And I could see these things starting to spring up across the country. I'd like to have a membership. I know that. So Tech Shop is definitely a geek haven. And you can have a link up to it in the show notes. And for those of you that have nice shops, I'm very, very jealous. Someday I will have one. Someday I'll have a place big enough to have my own shop. But from now, all I can hope is something like this would come to Honolulu. Apple has made some changes, and some people aren't real happy about it. Apple's confirmed that the iPod Touch cannot add calendar appointments. Yes, you heard me right. You know, they've loaded the iPod Touch with some of the applications that are on the iPhone, but they've made it so that you can't enter anything in the calendaring system. They've made it unavailable to be accessed. And essentially, what they're doing here is they're trying to draw a divide. Maybe what they saw on the day they announced it was that their iPhone sales went down by massive numbers, and maybe they saw the iPod Touch numbers go up because everybody assumed hey, I don't have to be encumbered to AT&T, but yet I can have a, you know, this iPod Touch has some of the same applications that's on the iPhone. So now you can only view calendar entries that have been created on your own computer and sync to the machine. Sync to the device. Come on, Apple. It's pretty low. What a blow. you know, definitely a cheap shot. And they had announced it initially as being available. Then they made a change over the last couple of days of what was actually going to be enabled on the iPod Touch. So if you're thinking about buying one of these, keep in mind that there's definitely going to be a delta between the two different products. All right, solar-powered plane breaks unmanned flight record. Now, while they are not showing, I'm assuming this picture that's on Engadget is the real deal. But according to the BBC, a United Kingdom defense firm called Quintech, I guess, has developed and tested a lightweight solar-powered plane, which has just broken the world's record for longest unmanned flight. It spent 54 hours in flight using only self-recharging solar power, breaking a previous 30-hour flight by one of the Air Force's expensive surveillance aircrafts. But they're saying that this plane had flown at 58,000 feet during its test, and the designer's saying that the aircraft, which is being called Zephyr, is going to go a lot higher and a lot further. The question is, what kind of a payload can this thing carry? You know, they're building it for the military. They're going to have to be able to put enough electronics in it to do whatever they want to do with it, I would imagine. But kind of cool. And if this is the actual picture of this thing that Engadget has got on their website, it looks pretty high tech. It really, really does. All right, those of you that playing around with the iTunes 7.4 release and had read about the hack that was out to be able to create your own free ringtones with the iTunes 7.4 release, you may have been prompted in the weekend to download iTunes 7.4.1 version 2. Well, it appears that Apple got a little paranoid and made a little bit of a change to the software overnight, and now all of a sudden the ringtones that everyone was creating and just renaming the extension no longer worked. But it only took about 30 minutes for those that are out there that are in the ringtone business, I guess, to come up with a hack to refix the one that iTunes had plugged. So some folks are definitely still able to create ringtones with the new 7.4.1 version 2, I think, is what the actual designation is. But a lot more on that on the net. You can just search around yourself and get plenty of info. Now, this is just a joke, but BB Spot has said that those people that originally bought the Apple Lisa 20 years ago are eligible for a 7K refund, or actually an actual credit in the Apple Store. Now, they're really worried about the bottom line here, because they say that that Apple could be liable for about $70,000 in refunds by those that had bought the Apple Lisa before. So, you know, this was a kind of a spin here, because the iPhone people, the folks that had bought iPhones, were crying about the price drop. So, you know, they went back and found one of the earliest products and and said that Apple would give rebates for those that had the 20-year-old Apple Lisa. So, oh, gosh, it's kind of funny. All right, there's a lot of people talking about the Windows Live Writer. A lot of positive reviews coming out. And even though I have not had a chance to check it out yet, I read one of the reviews over on AnnieBlogs.AnnieRush.net. And this guy's raving about this new this blogging application from Windows. So another indication here that maybe Microsoft got something right with this thing. So Windows Live Writer, definitely it's encouraging me to get it downloaded, installed, and checked out. Anybody else playing with it on the show? Is anyone using it? What do you think? I'm real curious if you're using it with movable type and if it supports all the native tags that movable type has. Oh, over on Center Networks, boy, you know, I have really kind of questioned some of the things that, well, not questioned, but I have my doubts about Jason Calacanis and his Mahalo website. And some of the things that they're doing over there. You know, anytime, and I'm not going to go into it too much here, but anytime you have human editors working on particular topical items, personal biases come in, and, you know, a lot of, you know, personal nuances can cause particular topics not to have a fair representation of everything. But that being said, there was a comparison done of a website called Hakia, H-A-K-I-A. And the question is being asked, is Mahalo a Hakia clone? And you look at the evidence that's on this article, and it raises my eyebrows just a little bit. There's, you know, it looks pretty close. Some of the data is pretty close. And so the questions are being asked, you know, are you guys pre-populating with the data from other sites, you know, where are you building your reference base from? Along with that, some people are pretty upset that there's been, you know, some gaming of the system here by those editors that are the employees and contractors that are working for Mahalo of actually being encouraged to dig and to spread the word through Didelicious and different types of sites about particular topics. And to help build page rank and visitation to the website. A very good article. Definitely Mahalo's getting a lot of scrutiny by a lot of people. Although I continue to wish Jason luck, I just, I don't know, I just think that sites that use only humans to build data, there's definitely a reason to, you know, to be concerned. And if you have a particular topic that you are an expert in and it's being covered over there at Mahalo, go through and look and see if they're covering all of the things that they should. And if they're not, make sure you submit the links that probably need to be in their system and see if they get added. Now, I do notice that if you submit a link, you have to have a whole bunch of other people submit a link in order to get it added too. They don't always just automatically add stuff. Which I guess to be expected, but at the same point, again, I think it's purely at the discretion of the person editing the particular category. Okay, moving on here. This next one I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. If you've been on MySpace or PhotoBucket recently and you're an Internet Explorer user, and if you have happened to have clicked through to some of the advertisements that were on a particular page, this may be a good article for you to read. I'm sure many of you are not MySpace or PhotoBucket users and are clicking on ads within IE. But if you are, there is a Trojan being spread by some ads that are on there, and the only way you can really get it is by clicking through. So I'll have the link up in the show notes on this as well. All right, over the weekend I got an email from one of the listeners sending me asked me a question about something that was being asked of people that use Google Earth, and what it essentially boiled down to was that Google Earth users were being asked to search for the adventurer Steve Fawcett, who is missing somewhere within the United States. I guess there's a couple of state area. They have a pretty good idea where the plane may have, you know, within a specific area where this plane may have went down. And they're asking people to use Google Earth to search for the plane wreckage. And I got to thinking about this a little bit, and I'm like, I don't think people realize, but most of the satellite imagery that is in Google Earth or even Google Maps does not get updated on a daily basis. You know, the satellite data that they get this information from is circling the Earth, and, you know, it only maps a small portion every time it goes into orbit, and you know places on Earth don't get imaged every day. It just doesn't work that way. So their goal here to try to help find this guy and find the wreckage of this plane using Google Earth, I thought was a little misplaced. Now, unless someone knows something that I don't about Google Earth, let me know. But essentially, the listener's question was, hey, is this a good idea? And I kind of responded back saying, no, I don't think so, based upon what I've just told you in the show as well. So this was trying to be actually came from the project was being coordinated via Amazon's Humid Power Problem Solving Scheme called Mechanical Turk, which I wasn't familiar with, but that's over at mturk.com. And I haven't seen too many people comment on this. So if you spent time looking for this guy via Google Earth, I don't know if it really did any good or not. Good article on Adblock Plus. We've already talked about it on a couple of shows, but I'm just going to put a link up to an article that was put up by Nicholas Carr. He talks about Adblock Plus and some of the plus and minuses of it, and along with some other utilities people are starting to use more. A little more information on the RIAA as well. I won't go into the particular article, but needless to say, they are fighting not to have to face a jury in one of their cases, and this one may actually be the first RIAA lawsuit that will actually go to a jury trial. So we'll keep an eye on this one. Link will be up in the show notes. Those of you that have Canon digital cameras, you know, many of the low-end digital cameras, you cannot shoot to film or shoot images in the RAW format, RAW format. And I didn't even be honest with you. I didn't have any high-end digital cameras until, well, I have a Rebel. So it's not super high-end, but it's a real nice digital camera, and I can change lenses on it. And that camera was capable of giving me raw images. But many, many other low-end, you know, essentially pocket Canon cameras are not. But they're saying now that some of the hackers and crackers have been out there, have been working on modifying the firmware and many of the cameras that are using the DIGIC, the DIGIC2, the DIGIC 2 chip. They've modified the firmware to allow people to be able to actually shoot in RAW format. And that's really, really awesome. It really is. If you have not worked with raw images before, it's the full unadulterated, non-compressed picture, essentially. And I really like working with raw images myself. And this may give you a chance for those of you that have a little lower-end camera to be able to get raw out of your camera instead of have to just deal with JPEG. Instead of JPEG, you can shoot in raw. So pretty cool. One thing I love about this new digital age is that anyone, any place, anywhere, or anytime can essentially launch a tech company, build a website presence, come up with an idea, have a website built and launched. And what's going on over Europe is no exception. There was essentially what's called Seed Camp. Europe's Seed Camp winners were announced. And this is a new style incubator event. Strictly for European startups, and the winners of that have been announced, and I'm going to just read through these here. Project Playfair, Zimanta, Cubelax, Tablefinder.com, BuilderSite.co.uk. So this is kind of a cool site. Check this out. This is a way to build a web marketplace for construction services. And it's kind of a pretty cool little site, rentmineonline.com. So again, just a few websites that were, recognized at the Seed Camp. I have the link up in the show notes, and y'all can check it out. Those of you that are listening from Europe, definitely support those tech companies in your community if you can, and send them some traffic from time to time. Okay, Adobe Online's image editor has been previewed over at TechCrunch. Very, very cool. You know, there's a lot of these tools out now where there's some online image editors. You know, it seems like there's a new one every day. But there's a number of startups that probably are not going to have such a good weekend with Adobe jumping joining the party here. But it's not a Photoshop replacement, but it is a new member of what they're saying. It's a new member of the Photoshop family that's meant to make Adobe imaging technology immediately accessible to a very large number of people. So no price point on this yet, but from what I see in this overview, very, very cool, especially being able to do it online. All right, in tonight's show, there's going to be a few links to some articles that I'm not going to talk about within the podcast itself, but I'll give you a little hint here. If you are a big Google Earth fan and you are also into remote-controlled vehicles, in other words, if you have little airplanes that you're mounting cameras and stuff to, there is some very, very cool stuff going on. And almost makes me want to get involved in the hobby. But this article that's over on thelongtail.com discusses some stuff that are going on. And you could almost make a business out of some of the things that some of these hobbyists are doing now, tying in some of these off-the-shelf tools that are available. But enough on that. I almost talked about the whole article, but the link will be up in the show notes. There's a great article on TechDirt talking about, do ISPs ignore security researchers who point out zombied machines? As we all know, there's a lot of computers out there that have been breached and are being used very irresponsibly by people all over the world by using either as email remailers or using to do attacks on different machines. But for a long time, security researchers have been able to, you know, build lists of machines that are essentially have been breached, and they've been providing those to ISPs. But it appears that many ISPs don't respond at all when told that a customer is causing trouble. Now, while it's not inclusive of everyone, there's been a large number of the big ISPs who are just simply doing nothing. They're ignoring it. And it just, to me, is shocking. It really, really is. So what I would like to ask is, I would like to ask any of you that may work with one of the big ISPs in the country, let's say Earthlink, Comcast, Roadrunner, any of the big, big broadband carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, what are y'all doing? What's your policy? And, you know, if you want to send this to me privately, you can. I won't reveal your name on the show. I'd love to hear what the internal policy is on dealing with machines that are zombies and that are responsible and are part of big botnets. You know, are you guys being active? Are you shutting those accounts down until the person takes care of it? Are you ignoring it? Are you blocking the machine port-wise? You know, what's being done? You know, all of us connect to the internet through some service provider or another. And I'm sure some of you are on college campuses, and some of you may, you know, get your connectivity through your job, or, you know, it all depends. But you're connecting through some company, and, you know, sadly, if you'd have a machine that would be hacked, I think you'd want to know about it. I definitely would. You know, wouldn't you want to know if someone has breached your internal, you know, firewalls? And, you know, that to me would shake me to the core if I got an email from my internet service provider saying, hey, show a particular machine over here that's named this has been hacked. Now, while it would scare me and immediately cause me to pull the plug on everything, at the same time, I'd be thankful for knowing it, because I'm doing banking business, I'm doing chats online, I'm talking business, I'm sharing information, stuff that I definitely don't want to get out in the public domain. So where's the policy at with these folks? Why aren't they helping solve the problem? you know, you can get rid of the botnets pretty quick if you, you know, if you have a list of machines that are hacked and the internet service providers just block them. You know, you stop it dead in the tracks, and you do that enough, you get people security aware, then, you know, it's the folks that have, you know, these folks that are building these botnets aren't going to be able to, you know, breach as many zombied computers out there. But I do know that I have some relatives who I've went to their house on Thanksgiving or Christmas or visited on a weekend and sat down from their computer, and it's been completely thrashed and owned by someone that doesn't live in their home. And, you know, you go to work for several hours to try to clean the machine up, and you don't know if you got it all. So I think ISPs need to be a little more proactive. How about you folks? You think they do? 619-342-7365 is the voicemail hotline. Love to hear your comments on this as well. Okay, you Skype user? You have a Windows machine? Skype is cautioning it's Skype for Windows users of a worm called W32RAMX.A. It's spreading fast within the service instant chat application as a link in an instant message. The message is cleverly written and may appear to be a legitimate chat message, which may fool some of you into clicking on the link. Be very, very careful out there. Make sure if you get a pop-up on your chat window, it contains a link from a friend of yours saying, hey, check this out. Make sure you get in the text box, say, hey, friend, did you just send me this? So that you can make sure that it's a legitimate link before you infect yourself by clicking through on it. So link to this will be up in the show notes. So we'll see what the internet, or actually the virus people get engaged here to get that detected and stopped in its tracks before it does too much damage. Okay, the Mars rovers are still kicking after the dust storm. Spirit and Opportunity, the two remote-controlled rovers exploring the surface of Mars, have survived. And they survived the longest dust storm that they were exposed to. And they're generating more power now. I guess there is still some concern for Spirit in this upcoming winter cycle. But they're generating about 128 watt-hours of energy each day. And, it only had 128 watt-hours of energy during the dust storm, but today it had about 350 watt-hours, and they say that the highest number of watt-hours they've ever had on any of the rovers was 900 watt-hours of energy 3.5 years ago. They are cautioning, though, that, and this is what I think is so funny here, these are really very old rovers. And their mechanisms are well beyond their design life by many, many factors. So the folks at NASA JPL are being very, very cautious. But you know what? Hey, they're American-made. They've done well. Many of the components have come from other countries, so they've done as well. You know, those supporting partners built us a heck of a seriously good rover that have, two rovers that have survived some very, very wicked conditions are out there still conducting science. So let's hope that the two rovers continue to crank away and do stuff for many souls. That's Martian days in the future. Okay, last couple articles here. Technorati has got a new, they've made an update to their webpage. And this is kind of interesting. What you can do is you can select entertainment, technology, politics, sports, business, life. And it updates, it continues to roll through. And I can't tell if they've got this thing in a loop or not, but it rolls and updates new posts coming into Technorati. It's really amazing, it really is. But I'm seeing here, which is odd, WeZapper comes with a Zelda software. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 articles that have popped up from the same service. And you can tell some of these websites are on automatic publishing cycles too. So they, it looks like boom, 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 two or three articles get posted in a row. And it looks like they're on published time release, which is an interesting strategy for sure. But check out the new Technorati homepage. Hey, I want to thank Michael Gohagan. He put out a nice blog post on his website. He says, congratulations to Todd Cochran for joining those of us on full-time podcasting train. He says, kind of nice to pay your mortgage while pursuing your passion, huh? And Todd says, Todd and I had some productive discussions at last year's CES, which we did. We sat beside each other for quite a while there at the blog house. And while Michael and I agree to disagree on some things, we do agree that podcasting is a great business to be in right now. And it's nice to be able to put the passion forth. But he goes on to say, glad to say he can now focus his energies. I know it's been a long-term goal. Now, those of you that have been listening to this show for a while, I had forgotten about this post. Let me load this here in the browser. And let me go back to an article that I wrote at Geek News Central on February 27th, 2005. And here's the article. The goal has been set. Can I meet it in 30 months and counting? I have a goal. 30 months from today, I want to blog, podcast, consult full-time. The reason? 30 months? Well, that's about the time I will be concluding a 24 career with my current employer. This is a lofty goal, one that I am serious about meeting. My wife may have a thing or two to say about this, which she still does. But all I can do at this point is tell you my intentions. Now I just need to figure out how to turn that goal into reality, which will allow me to maintain my current lifestyle. That is definitely still a challenge. And send me your comments and thoughts. And many of you had sent, Dave had sent a comment, and there's a couple other on here too. So those of you that were here in 2005 when I made that lofty prediction and goal, I want to thank Michael Gohagan for remembering it and putting a post up on his website. All right, that's all the content I got for you tonight. Let's go ahead and I got two voicemail comments and a pile of email to go through. So hopefully by the next show, I will have knocked this cough out. It's just driving me crazy. It really, really is. Of course, it's worse early in the morning and late at night, and it's pretty late here. But let's go ahead and play the first voicemail that come in. One of these is particularly long, but good commentary nonetheless. I'll go ahead and play it anyway. So here's the first one.
Hey, Todd, it's John from Lakewood.
Hey, John.
First off, I'm going to try really hard to keep this under 2 minutes. Here goes. About net neutrality and Verizon, AT&T, and all the other big boys. Absolutely. They ought to be allowed to charge whatever they want for their network, high speed and low speed. Except unless they've been awarded money by the federal government, which is money by the taxpayer. If they've used any taxpayer funds or bought any taxpayer-funded portion of their network, they ought not to be allowed to do that. So, if any of those big three, or whoever is in it, can show that they have not purchased any infrastructure or used anything that was provided for them or created for them out of public use dollars, all for it. I don't think they can do it. And
I don't
believe that they ought to. As for the 700 megahertz spectrum, Verizon bought that. That's a spectrum that is public. The federal government regulates that spectrum, and we sell it off for the common good, or that's the way it's supposed to be. Look at the FCC's charter. Anyway, that's my 2 cents from under 2 minutes. I don't think they ought to do it. We own those airwaves. We just allow the government to monitor them and control them and sell them. Okay. Hey, have a great day, and welcome to Happy 300. Okay. Bye.
Hey, thanks for the comments, and I was coughing in during your voicemail there, but I agree. If they've if they've got any money to help open up public access, you're right, they shouldn't be allowed to charge tiered services, but they're going to. Many of these companies have built their networks on the backs of governmental grants and extra taxes that have been put on our our phone bills for years. So, you know, I don't think they can say it either. All right, let's play the next voicemail. Of course, you all can comment as well by dialing into the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Here's the next one.
Todd, hey, Brian. Congratulations on show 300.
Thanks.
I'm on the road, so I hope the Sprint connection holds up here. I know you mentioned a couple shows ago to keep the messages short, and I usually try to, but there's a couple things I really wanted to get in touch with you about. One is, have you ever considered having a stream of like all the podcasts that are on the podcast network, just, you know, cycle them in when someone comes out with a fresh one? And I thought that would be pretty good with, you know, as an internet radio. I mean, you don't have to have a real high bandwidth for it's just voice, not music. And then I got to thinking, well, it'd be pretty cool if you had, like, on Blueberry or something where you could sort of select the shows that you want to stream, kind of like Pandora does with music. Anyway, I wonder if you had ever thought about that or any of the guys over there. And I thought that might be a pretty good idea. And the second thing is, I want to hold that order if you can cancel it on that Touch iPod. I was the same way when I was like, wow, how's a browser? Okay, I Wi-Fi, I want one. And I went to that Apple flagship store, and they weren't in yet. So I just happened to look at the Arcos players, the fifth generation. And that thing has a video recorder where you can hook it to almost any analog or digital. I know any analog source and record video on it. It's Wi-Fi. It uses Opera, and you have to pay. You have to pay a fee for the Opera. I don't know, to unlock it or something, 20, 30 bucks or something. But it's not that big. It's not much more than a half inch thick. It's a little bit bigger because it has a bigger screen. And there's a couple different models. But the cool thing about it is you can get one or two different docking stations. There's a bunch of add-ons. One of them is it's not mobile. It comes with a remote, so you can hook the thing to your television and just use it like a little DVR from your couch. And the other one is mobile, but you can hook any sort of external lens up to that thing. You know, you can use it essentially as a video camera. I know a while back you were looking for a portable PC, and I don't know what functions you wanted, and maybe the iPod Touch is kind of supplementing some of those, but you should. I think it's a 604 is the model number, the fifth generation, and there's one other, maybe a 404. But if you look at the accessories, you can almost essentially get both of them to do the same thing, and they're getting really, they get really good reviews, and I think I'm going to dig into that a little bit more before I consider buying that Touch iPod, because I think it's drag and drop, and my guess is any apps, I think it would be more unlocked or more open source sort of than any Apple product, but definitely check it out if you still have time to cancel that order on that iPod Touch. All right, give us feedback what you think about it, if you take a look at it. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Hey, aloha. And I tell you, thanks for the great comment. You know what I'm going to be doing is the part of the reason I'm buying an iPod Touch is we need one to do testing with some things we're going to do with Tech Podcast, Blueberry, and Podcaster News. We haven't, none of us in the group had actually had purchased the iPhone. So it kind of gives us a chance to kill two birds with one stone here. And that's part of the reason. And I am familiar with the Archos. I know what they're doing over there with that. And it's definitely a great alternative product to check out. Now, so far as the streaming stuff goes, you know, we had, in matter of fact, I probably need to get the link up, but the Tech Podcast Network, we do have a stream. And I need to go in and look and see what the status of that is. Ever since we put the new site up, I think we forgot to put the link up. But that made me kind of go, oh, I wonder if that's still running. So let me check into that. Now, on Blueberry or even on Tech Podcast, one thing that you can do, obviously, if you're listening to a stream, you are connected to the internet, you're available to, you have good connectivity. We have a system over there where you can go through and you can subscribe to the shows. You can create an account. You sign in, you pick the shows that you want to subscribe to, and you basically build your playlist. It's called MyCast. And when you go to the MyCast section of the website, we will stack and rack all of the media, newest to oldest. So when you press on the play button that's in there, the Blueberry Player will launch, and it will have all of the media, newest to oldest, in there. So you essentially, you get the same benefits of a stream without having to actually have a stream, because especially if you're on the road, it'll download the media, you know, in advance. So if you get disconnected, the media will continue to play. And as it gets, it won't grab the next set of media to it. It gets queued, but it's worked out the best. And that way, you can kind of listen progressively to the content that you want to listen to. And again, it's the MyCast system on either Tech Podcast, Podcaster News, or on Blueberry.com. I don't know if we really need a quote-unquote live stream that's running through, you know, a Windows Media Encoder going out to like a Live 365 or something like that. I don't know if there would be any more advantage. I really don't. I know that the stream over at Tech Podcast, when we actually had a actual stream running, the traffic on that was not super heavy, made it about worthwhile to do. So. But good comments and great suggestions, of course, too. Let me go ahead and load the email up here. And I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but I'm just about – I got that little frog down there. It's like saying cough, cough. I got an email from we're going back here a while. Some of this was comments to show 297, 298. Got an email from Ken saying, I'm catching up on your shows and listening to your last show on Friday. You had a caller that said that he got his Outlook for $29.99. He says, when I was working at Intel in 2004, a small stint there, we got it for free. It was Office 2003 with Word, Excel, Outlook, PowerPoint. No cost whatsoever, but it was only for home. Yeah, Ken, I think we kind of covered that we people are able to get that at a great price point. Ken goes on to say also, hey, don't worry about unlocking the iPhone. Go ahead and move forward with it. I think you should. Don't worry about getting it unlocked. All right, I got an email from Chris. Says, hey, he says, I think time travel will be possible in 20 years. He says, and he has a link to a website here. So now I would not go investing in it, but I think the theories are sound. In addition, as a believer in God and Christ, I think that God has mastered time travel, among other things, which allows him to do all kinds of cool things, miracles, and it's possible we will all inherit that knowledge and technology at some point in the future. Those are my two pennies worth. That was from Chris. Got an email from JP. Hey, JP, I do know that the altered thumb story was a hoax. I do thank you for following up with me on that, though, so I do appreciate that. Got an email from Rare. He says, hey, Todd, this is Todd, Rare Todd. I heard your call for promos on Friday's episode of GNC. Well, I got one for you. My show is quite rare. I'm a stay-at-home dad with depression and playing punk and noise music on each of the Rare Todd Show podcast. And I'll go ahead and actually drop this into the actual directory that I've got for this. Let me go ahead and drop that in there. And let's play his promo here. Let's see if I can load this up real quickly without wasting too much time. Add file. And let's go ahead and see what he has to, what the promo is. Yo, yo, yo! Yo, yo, yo!
Say you'll break out. You never do. You're just another ant in the hill.
Woo! that's something you need to listen to at about 5 o'clock in the morning when you haven't had enough sleep. Hey, Rare Todd, I hope good luck with your show, and I'll put a link up to your podcast at raretodd.net. All right, the next email is from Mike Hamilton. He's actually the maintainer of the Disney Podcast Directory over at disneypodcastdirectory.net. He said, "Hey, Todd, here's a show that I thought you might be interested in or know of someone that may be interested in listening to it. The host of the show is also a co-host of the Disney podcast, and that's how I heard of it. It's the NavalAir.net podcast. Very, very cool. I'll have to check that out. Thanks for that, Mike. I'll have that link up in the show notes. Also got an email from Rob. Actually, Rob's our marketing director over at Raw Voice, and he's got a link for me. He says, I thought this post may be of interest to the Geek News Central listeners. And this is a situation he had with some nightmares he had in getting some DSL shut off and turned on between AT&T and Verizon. It's a great read. Definitely check it out. Got an email from Paul. He says, "Hey, Todd, you may want to modify the terms of your offer in case someone takes you literally. They haven't made a $1,000 bill since 1945, and if you do have one, you should hang on to it. Even a circulated $1,000 bill is in good circulation, will probably set you back about $3,000. It's got a big smiley face." Well, that's probably a good point, Paul. Someone may actually call me out and say they want a $1,000 bill. And this in reference to someone building a standalone podcatcher, an open source podcatcher for the iPod Touch. So thanks for the advice, Paul. And if anybody's got a $1,000 bill out there that's a legal tender, I'll definitely give you $1,001 for it. Okay, got an email from Shane. He said, "Hey, Todd, what's up? Quick question about high-def video cameras. We just got a Sony and was wondering if you knew of a way to burn the high-def file to a regular DVD or another idea. The paperwork shows that the high-def cam can be burned to DVD, but not played on a normal DVD player, but can be played on a computer or an VCHD DVD player. Where there be a way to play it on a PC and stream it to the TV through a wire? I'm doing research now, but wanted to get your take. By the way, we will likely store our stuff on an external drive, but my wife does photography part-time and wants to be able to sell the HD video she makes. Any ideas? Have a good weekend. Shane out of North Georgia." I guess the question then, Shane, is first of all, what kind of a camera is it? Is it currently storing the high def to tape, or does it actually go to a DVD currently? Because essentially what you have to do in order to have the video put to a high def disc is you need a HD, whatever particular, either Blu-ray or an HD recorder to do this, because you got to have software as well that will encode in HD. Currently, now I'm probably getting in trouble here because I shoot in HD, but I don't encode any of my stuff back to HD disk. I normally encode to .mov or a MP4, different types of file sizes to make it so it's more portable. But I do have all the originals, so maybe Paul can weigh in here on this. On what Shane should do, and maybe some of you that shoot a lot more video than I do can answer the question for him again. So again, his quick question is on high-def videos, it's a Sony. So it is a Sony camera. Now, they don't shoot in a default. Is it going to tape? I guess that's the question here. So he was wondering if you knew a way to burn the high-def file to a regular DVD or had another idea. Well, I take all my stuff and I put it in a Final Cut Pro. And actually, I found out that the Sony cameras and their actual Sony digital recorders that they sell now for those cameras doesn't shoot in .mov files. So people are having a lot of trouble with it in Final Cut Pro and actually dealing with the digital file that Sony creates. But I don't think so. I don't think at this point. But maybe someone that's listening will have a lot more idea than I do when it comes to video. And if anyone wants to help Shane out, I'd be more than happy to forward the email to you as well. Got an email from Matthew. Said, hey, Todd, just firing off a message response to what you talked about in episode 299. I've been listening to GNC since 2005 or so, and for most of that time, that is until this month, I was a dial-up user. I live in a semi-rural fringe suburb in Perth, Western Australia, and until 2 years ago, any development of our telecommunications infrastructure was totally halted. Why 2 years? He says, because that's when they decided to expand us into a proper suburb and develop the area. The problem being, they only installed new infrastructure for the new suburbs and never upgraded the existing aging hardware. He goes on to say, wonderful. I have tried many times to get broadband in any method over the past 7 years to these ends. He says, cable was never put into the ground despite a petition. I'm too far from the exchange rim, and he has aging telephone lines, plus distance, increased line attenuation to 56 dB, which is a lot of loss, which is a huge amount of loss. Wireless alternatives are prohibitively expensive. He says, the only reason I have it now is because one ADSL 2 Plus provider finally agreed to give me service on the provision that I would be happy with whatever speed I got. The result is I pay $25 a month for a 24 megabit ADSL to get a speed of 1 to 1.5 megabits. It's the best, but it's a start. Unfortunately, I doubt many other people in my area may have actually managed to do the same, so I feel their pain. In closing, all the best. Love the show. Keep it up. Regards, Matt. Matt, man, I tell you, it's got to get better for all of us. It really does on the broadband stuff. I just can't imagine the rest of the country, the rest of the world not being on broadband at some point or the other in the future. Got an email from JP. He says, I'm an IT professional. I've worked at several places, government and local. I was contacted 1 year for the Department of Corrections. Security there was really tight. We had two networks. One was for us and one for the prisoners. I laugh at some people. They complain about passwords, six characters, because they were required. I laugh at some of the people that complain about passwords, six characters, one uppercase, one lowercase, one number. When I worked at the prison, our passwords were 12 characters in length and must include two uppercase, two lowercase, two numbers, and two symbols. Since we had two networks, I had two passwords, and I bet no one ever wrote those passwords down and put them on a piece of paper. That's my ad lib. They also did things like ban Yahoo, Hotmail. One person got reprimanded for checking his fantasy football team on Yahoo. Then again, when you have a highly volatile environment like prison, you can understand why this is. Although a couple of facilities have prisoners take apart and rebuild donated computer parts, they seem to have higher-end stuff than I did. I contracted for a while, so while I worked in hospitals, banks, retail, corporate, I've seen all types of security machines that were locked down for use of one program or point-of-sale systems. One place even separated their IT so one person didn't have all the passwords or permissions to do damage. I've seen that as well. He says, currently I'm working at a place where I am the IT, just myself, a supervisor and a trainer. We work on company security, but it's not that strict. We have a separate DSL line for wireless traffic. This is mostly for outside resources that get to the internet. We let people do what they want with the expectation that they're professionals and don't intentionally put our data at risk. There are a few things I'd like to change, but they will have a down home feel. Therefore, it takes time, which I'm willing to work with. Anyway, that's my experience. I'm glad I'm not working in a strict environment. I would be going crazy. So congrats on your courage change move. Congrats on 300 show too. Appreciate it. And aloha to you as well, JP. So yeah, I think it goes the whole gambit when it comes to different security levels on where you may or may not work. Wendy, thanks for your submission. Unfortunately, you're one show late, but I definitely appreciate your comment and your suggestion. Got an email from Sam. Hey, Sam, thanks. Congratulations, basically for you sending the congratulations. Appreciate that. Got an email from Jeffrey. Appreciate your comments as well, Jeffrey, and thanks for your support. Matthew, he said show with 300 was great, fantastic to hear some of the first show and some highlights of other milestones. As a listener, it has always been enjoyable and a stable part of my week for so long. Best wishes for your last day. You should be in the bar by now, I reckon, which I was. And it must be both exciting and scary to finally be reaching such a turning point in your life. I'm confident that your enthusiasm and work will effort will ensure you succeed spectacularly. Hope to be part of the Ohana for a long time, as I hope you will be as well, Matthew. Appreciate your comments. I got an email from Nir. He basically asked, and we kind of talked about some of this stuff already, what my take was on the iPod Touch. And there's some other things here, too, that Nir sent. Appreciate your comments, Nir, on your comments. And then one last one here is I got one from, let's see, from Bill. He said, Todd, you inquired about listeners on dial-up and using AdBlock. AdBlock is very efficient, learns quickly, right-click on a new annoying animation or image, and it's gone. If adverts thwart AdBlock, I would conceivably drop using iNet. I do know banking or business on iNet, if can be avoided, and I use a public library if necessary. And he goes on to talk about his system and what he's using, but... Anyway, thanks for the comments, Bill. Definitely appreciate it. And gosh, there's just more here. It goes on and on. We can go longer. Got an email from John, and let me actually drop this into. Oh, here's another audio comment. Definitely going to go long tonight. And let me pick this up here. And here comes another audio comment.
Hey, Todd, this is John. First off, just wanted to congratulate you on show number 300. Can't wait for another 300 shows. Can't wait to hear show number 1,000. There you go. See, think positively. You'll get there. Regarding the whole iPhone thing, I'm rather disappointed that Steve Jobs decided to give this $100 credit because, I mean, guys, I'm glad that you're thrilled that you bought your iPhone early, but you did pay an early adopter tax. It's not just with phones, it's with anything else. You go for it that early, the price is going to drop, and if you're not patient enough to wait for the price drop, then why should anybody owe you anything? I paid for an AMD processor that at the time was $300, and less than a month later, it dropped to $139. So there's a $160 drop. And you know what? I just shrugged my shoulders and said, oh well, bad timing, that's what happens. I didn't go back to AMD demanding credit, and I certainly didn't go back to the store where I bought it from and said, I want $80 store credit. That's what happens with technology. I think in a way it's telling regarding how some of the iPhone people reacted, but that's a totally different thread. I don't want to get accused of being anti-Apple, especially considering I want one of those iPod Touches. But I just wanted to vent on that one. But I also wanted to talk about Randy's call regarding Verizon. Randy, brother, I feel your pain. Because I live in Pennsylvania, but I work in Maryland. And if I'm talking to my wife on the way home...
Now, I want to put in a disclaimer right now. I use a hands-free Bluetooth headset with voice recognition on my phone, so I never have to touch the phone in order to make a call. So please get off your high horse and don't bother telling me to shut up and drive. Thank you very much.
So anyway, I have to say, I'm approaching the drop zone. And she knows exactly what I mean because that means I'm approaching the Pennsylvania-Maryland border. There's something about that area... that it will hold on to my signal until there's nothing, drop the call, and if I immediately try to dial again, the phone is at full! So 1 second it's at zero, the next it's at full. Hello! So, Randy, I feel your pain. Well, that's it. Don't want this to go on too long. So, congrats again on the 300, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for the comments, and I really can't add anything more to that except... I think we've all felt your pain on the transition points. John did follow up with a email saying, this is incredible. Apparently with iPhone off doesn't mean it's off. Some folks went on a trip. They didn't use their phones, but when they got back, they had a 54-page bill with $4,800 in charges from AT&T. The problem was that their three iPhones were racking up a bill for data charges using foreign phone charges. The iPhone regularly updates email even while it's off. How is this possible? So that all of the message will be available when the user turns it on. Apple spokesman Natalie Karras points out in the terms and conditions that it will cost an arm and a leg to use the iPhone out of the U.S. even if no services are intentionally used. Does it say an arm and a leg? Wow. So now the iPhone users are punished for traveling internationally and bringing their iPhone with them. The arrogance of AT&T and Apple in this matter is absolutely staggering. I agree. Agree completely. Link to this will definitely be in the show notes. I'm going to go ahead and knock out the rest of these email comments. I got an email from Kevin. He says, Todd, congrats on the retirement. I hope that you're feeling better now and over being sick. I'm over sick. I wish the cough would go away. I know sometimes those bugs can hold on for a while. While I was listening to your podcast and heard you were sick, it got me wondering if you'd ever taken a product called Airborne. Never have heard of it before. I do not work for Airborne. I'm not trying to get Airborne publicized in your podcast. I just thought I would mention it because it has saved my family and myself a few times from becoming sick, and you can pick it up at just about any store or pharmacy. Here in the States, it goes for around $5 or $6. Now, for a little tech niblet, I emailed you once about a site that offers iPhone wallpaper. Well, I found an even better site that offers free iPhone wallpaper as well as wallpaper for the PC, Mac, Linux, PSP, icons, etc. They really have some gorgeous wallpaper. You can check it out at interfacelift.com. Have the link up to that in the show notes. Keep up the great work. Enjoy your retirement. And last but not least, thank you from the bottom of my heart for all your years put in serving our country. It was my pleasure, Kevin. Thank you very much. Hey, Glenn, I want to thank you for email and the very funny geek story on an email exchange you had and some T-shirts you're trying to buy. And I'll kind of share this in a separate note at some point on the show. But thanks for that. Also got an email from Steven. He said, just listen to your show on 9707. I use Google Reader very often to monitor certain news feeds, but the majority of my use is keeping up on podcasts. Like Geek News Central and others, I started trying to use a podcatcher at home and load them to my MP3 player, which was nice for my commute, provide cumbersome while I was at my desk. I gave up on that and do 90% of my podcast listening on Google Reader. I've wanted a search feature since the day I started using it. Hooray for Google. Love your show and can't wait to hear from the next one. Appreciate that. Got an email from Jim. And he puts me a link to 6 Apart iPhone support, some new software they put up. If you are using a mobile type and or TypePad, you can now post with a new tool that they've made available, 6 Apart has. I also got a last email for the night is from Andrew Darlow. And let's see if this thing's going to load. He says, hey, Todd, congrats on the show 300. They're both, and your upcoming retirement, those are both great milestones. Also celebrating a milestone, I finished the final edit of my upcoming 499-page book that covers inkjet printing tips for photographers of all levels. I don't know how you finished yours in 6 weeks. Actually, it was 8 weeks. I worked about 2 years on this book. It's now at the printer and should start shipping in October. Make sure you send us a link to that, Andrew, when it gets published and it's on Amazon or wherever you have it listed. But he provides some other links I'll have up in the show notes tonight. Wow, we're really long, but hey, had to catch up on all this stuff. Thanks, everybody, for being part of the family. Thanks for sending all the great comments, all the voicemails, everything. Back to a kind of a normal show routine on the next show. And if any show is normal, I guess. But geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Please support our sponsors, and until next time, aloha.